Good morning. If you're visiting with us this morning, today is our seventh week in the book of Daniel, which is a truly rich study. We're looking at the kingdom of Jesus Christ and how it was promised long before it came, and how God, our God, is sovereign over all of the kingdoms of the world. They are His. When Satan brought Jesus up onto the mountain and showed him all of the kingdoms of the world, and he said to him, "All of these things I will give to you if only you'll bow down and worship me," Satan there, as he always does, was lying, for these kingdoms were not his to give. These kingdoms belong to God. Every nation in the world belongs to God. Every nation is His. He made man in His image. He determined the boundaries and the dwelling places for all of mankind sovereignly. God owns every nation, every kingdom, every empire. They are all His, and He will use them and direct them as He so chooses. Daniel is a book that teaches this. Now, we finished chapter 2 last week, and, well, we nearly finished it. There's a small part that really isn't a small part at the end that I want to say something about it before we move into chapter 3 this morning. So you can open in your Bibles to Daniel chapter 2, and I'm going to read verses 46 through 49. Daniel 2, 46 through 49. Daniel has just relayed to King Nebuchadnezzar what he dreamed. And he dreamed of this image, this statue that was great and terrifying, that had a head of gold and a chest of silver and a middle of bronze and legs of steel and feet of iron and clay, or legs of iron and feet of iron and clay. And Daniel said, essentially, these are the kingdoms. This is your kingdom. Your kingdom is the head of gold, and after you will be these other kingdoms. And then God will bring His eternal kingdom that will bring these things to nothing. And so he relayed this, and the king is amazed by this, because Daniel wasn't told the contents of the dream. The king left that a mystery, and so Daniel went and he prayed to God, and God showed him what the king had dreamed. And so Daniel told him what he dreamed, and Nebuchadnezzar knew this could only be from the gods, as he might say. And so he's amazed, and here's where the story picks up. Verse 46 of Daniel chapter 2. Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face and paid homage to Daniel and commanded that an offering and incense be offered up to him. The king answered and said to Daniel, "Truly, your God is God of gods and Lord of kings, and a revealer of mysteries, for you've been able to reveal this mystery." Then the king gave Daniel high honors and many great gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief prefect over all of the wise men of Babylon. Daniel made a request of the king, and he appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel remained at the king's court. Now, there are a couple of things. One aspect that is going to be brought out in great detail in chapter 3 is that though Nebuchadnezzar is beginning to understand the God of heaven and His great and awesome power, he does not fully understand what that means. He bowed down to Daniel and commanded that there be offering and incense offered to him. And then he says, "Your God is the greatest of all the gods." So he knows there's something great and awesome about Jehovah, but he doesn't quite understand what that entails. He's going to get there, and the story is just showing that journey as it unfolds. But what I want for you to notice is this. I have been saying, really from the beginning of my tenure here at Oldham Lane, and I will continue to say it so long as God gives strength in my body and words in my mouth, that the way that we will impact the world around us, this lost and dying and decaying world, is through a public display of faithfulness. The world must see us. The world must hear us. Look at what has happened. When the notion that the kingdom of Jesus Christ is limited to the church. Look at what has happened to the broader world as more and more ground has been ceded to lying thoughts and pagan ideas and the conventions of man, where the world was its own place and the church was its own place, and the two do not touch. As we're seeing in the book of Daniel, the kingdom of Jesus Christ concerns the entire world. You see, the kingdom even of Israel was to concern the whole world. God told them, "You will be a kingdom of priests. You will be a light unto the nations." But anytime God said, "Go show your light, go influence the nations around you," there was almost a reticence against it. Jonah, really? Assyria? You want me to go to Nineveh? You want me to preach to those pagans? And God said, "Yes, you will. Even if you disobey me, I'll find a way to get you there. I'll cast you overboard and swallow you whole by a fish and spit you out on the land where I want for you to go. You will go be a light unto the nations." But the kingdom of Israel, they decided that they were going to keep their light within themselves. And as they did that, the world encroached. And it got closer and closer and closer until they, the kings, marrying the daughters of the sons of men, began to worship the gods and the false idols and those things of the day. And they brought into the holy land of Israel, the one in covenant with the living God, they brought in all of these false ideas. They brought in pagan idolatry. They ultimately brought it into the temple. See, it doesn't work when the people set up to be a light unto the world believe that that light is to be maintained within. It has to shine out. The influence must be out there. We need faithful Christian soldiers who will take their faith in the living God and their commitment to the one true King over all the universe and to go live that out in their workplaces, to show it, to speak it, to influence the world in those ways. Now, this influence sometimes will result in immediate persecution, as we're going to see. But sometimes this influence will cause a person of God to stand out among all of their peers, as it did in Daniel chapter 2, and even in Daniel chapter 1. This influence sometimes will bring upon you persecution, but at other times, it will cause you to stand out. You will be set apart from the world. They'll say, "What is this? What is this integrity? What is this honesty? What is this work ethic? What is this spirit of excellence? What is this joy? What is this hope? What does this person have? It's clearly good. It prospers my business. I'm going to put you at the top." Sometimes it will result in that. And the practical question for you is, when you go to that position, when God elevates you to such a place as God was elevating Daniel, when God brings you into a position of authority, whether it's in the government or a local institution or a school or a nonprofit or whatever it is, whenever God brings you into such a position as that, what you must do, as you're given authority in such a place as that, what you must do is surround yourself in that place with like-minded, God-fearing, courageous, holy people. As you are given authority over these places, that's what you must do. This is the first thing Daniel did. Daniel was placed as chief over all of the wise men who could not answer the king. Daniel had the answer. He said, "It's not from me, it comes from God above." But when he was put in that place, the request Daniel made immediately was, "May I put Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. Let me be surrounded by other godly people. How should we bring influence? Look, it's not by hiring based on the standards that the world around us gives. How often do organizations and institutions, whether it's a government or a local business, make their hires based on very trivial standards, superficial standards? The institution that you attended, the piece of paper that has your degree on it, or perhaps even an artificial DEI pressure point. These standards are not in accord with the Word. In the Word, it doesn't matter where a person comes from, it does not matter their color of their skin, none of that matters. God's decision for whom God elevates is those who have faith. Surround yourself with people of faith. I think about many of our Christian colleges and how they've chosen their hires based on one's theological status, where he got his degree. Oh, you got your PhD in theology from Princeton. Pretty good. It's a hard school to get into. Won't you come here? Won't you come and teach those things to our students? See, you're the most credentialed. You have the most information. Come here. You went there? Really? You're a smart guy. Too smart for me. You know Hebrew. Wow. Come here. Preach to our students. How's that done for us? How's that done for us? Church, I mean it. What if the people of God elevated to such positions as Daniel was elevated, made their hires, surrounded themselves not with these trivial standards that men provide, but with those things which God himself says? What if we made our hires there? I'm telling you, if I've got a Christian college one day, give me a faithful shepherd of the Lord's church who's been deep in the book for 40 years, pastoring the flock of Jesus Christ, who knows the ins and outs and the difficulties there on the ground. Bring that guy in to run my theology department. We must surround ourselves with godly people. Period. Now, let me give you some high points from these couple of chapters. I'm going to read to you Daniel chapter 3, and I ask for your active attention in the hearing of the words of God as we hear what God is revealing to us. Hear these things. This is a marvelous story. There is a bit of humor within it. There is a great deal of repetition within it, and we are meant to hear these things read aloud. So hear these things from the living God. Daniel chapter 3. King Nebuchadnezzar, this is just after Daniel revealed to him, yours is the great kingdom, the head of gold. And see how he takes this. See, he doesn't quite know who he is yet, and he does not quite know who God is yet. So watch what he does first. He made an image of gold. See, he was the great head of gold, whose height was 60 cubits and its breadth 6 cubits. He set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then King Nebuchadnezzar sent to gather the satraps, the prefects, and the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then the satraps, the prefects, and the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces gathered for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And the herald proclaimed aloud. Now remember, who sets up kingdoms? Who brings them down? Who establishes a people? We're meant to see he's bringing this up. He's setting this up. Not God, this is Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar set it up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Verse 4, and the herald proclaimed aloud, "You are commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up." Music is very powerful. You turn on your music, you may not care what the lyric says, so long as the beat is catchy. It can sweep you up in many lies. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace. Therefore, as soon as all the peoples heard the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, all the peoples, nations, and languages fell down and worshipped the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and maliciously accused the Jews. They declared to King Nebuchadnezzar, "O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoever doesn't fall down and worship shall be cast into a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you've appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, pay no attention to you. Their rhetoric is masterful. And they do not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you've set up." Then King Nebuchadnezzar, in furious rage, it's the second time we've seen him get angry, commanded that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said to them, "Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I've set up? Now, if you're ready when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music to fall down and to worship the image that I've made, well and good. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands?" What a great question that he's about to see the answer to. Just as Pharaoh, when Moses came in and said, "Let the people of God go," he said, "Who is this God? I don't know him." Well, God showed it and God proved it. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we've no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you've set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with fury. There he is again, angry three times. And the expression of his face was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He ordered the furnace heated seven times more than it was usually heated. And he ordered some of the mighty men of his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their cloaks, their tunics, their hats, and their other garments, and they were thrown into the burning fiery furnace. Because the king's order was urgent and the furnace overheated, the flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell bound into the burning fiery furnace. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished and rose up in haste. He declared to his counselors, "Did we not cast three men bound into the fire?" They answered and said to the king, "True, O king." He answered and said, "But I see four men unbound walking in the midst of the fire, and they're not hurt. And the appearance of the fourth is like a son of the gods." Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the burning fiery furnace. He declared, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here." Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out from the fire, and the satraps, the prefects, the governors, and the king's counselors gathered together and saw that the fire had not had any power over the bodies of those men. The hair of their heads was not singed, their cloaks were not harmed, and no smell of fire had come upon them. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him and set aside the king's command and yielded up their bodies rather than serve and worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I make a decree. any people, nation, or language that speaks anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb and their houses laid in ruins. For there is no other God who is able to rescue in this way. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. What an awesome word. Did you hear that? What an awesome word. The king who knew not God, who demanded that people fall down and worship his image, declares there is no God like the Most High God. Would he have arrived at that point had there not been some with the courage and the resolve and the strength and the fortitude within them to be willing to go to the fire, to be willing to be cast in? Church, if you compare Daniel chapter 2 to Daniel chapter 3, the point there is very obvious. In chapter 2, if somebody does not speak up and raise their voice, there will be bloodshed. The king had said, I'm going to kill every wise man in the land unless I get the wisdom I'm in search of. And the people of God spoke up to preserve life. But in chapter 3, just the opposite. If you speak up, your life will be required of you. Those who speak up, those who stand up. See, when every knee bowed down, the three, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, remained standing. How would that look in a crowd of people? There may be 1,000, 5,000, 10,000 there. You'll see them. They'll stand out as a sore thumb. We're all afraid of that. The world is depending on such people as that. Chapter 3, the threat of death is for those who do speak up. But here's the thing. The truth of God was declared in both cases. It was declared to preserve life, and it was declared at the threat of losing their life. There's a time for either one of these. Daniel spoke up in chapter 2 to preserve life. Church, there's a time for that. Church, I'm talking to you. There's a time to speak up for life. Speak up now for the unborn babies of our world. Speak up now for them. I watched this exchange in a Senate hearing the other day. I don't know the characters. I don't know their names. I don't follow these people too closely. But the Senate hearing had something to do with abortion. And this man, this senator or something, I don't know who he was sitting there, and he was simply calling it out as it was. And he was saying, is this what you support? Just looking at the details of abortion. And he was speaking it very plainly, and it was quite uncomfortable. Listen to this, Proverbs 24, 10 through 12. If you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small. Rescue those who are being taken away to death. Hold back those who are stumbling to the slaughter. If you say, behold, we didn't know this. Doesn't he who weighs the heart perceive it? Doesn't he who keeps watch over your soul know it? And won't he repay man according to his work? Church, we must speak up, not only for the innocent, but even for the guilty. We must speak up even for those who hate us. Bonhoeffer, during the height of the Third Reich, he built up his efforts for quite a while, but he said, silence in the face of evil is evil itself. God will not hold us guiltless. Not to speak is to speak. Not to act is to act. But what strikes me is that we're not called only to stand up for the innocent, but Daniel in chapter 2 spoke up for the very ones that in chapter 3 would seek their death. The very ones later on who would seek to throw him into the lion's den. Speak up even for the people who hate the message that you preach. They've been trained, they've been taught. In their worldview, they think you wrong, they think you hateful. Speak up, speak the truth, no matter what it means. Jesus said, do not fear those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. What I've been saying all along is if we want to bring lasting change to the world, then we need holy saints of God who will step into the public world with an undying devotion to the triune God. We need those who will place the glory of God above their own comfort, as these men did. We need those who will obey God rather than men, those who will biblically love the enemies who would destroy them, those who will not desert under pressure. We need those who will remember in their exalted state precisely what it was that made them great in their humility. And what is that? It's not about me. Many know it's not about me, and then they're raised high and they forget it. Now that they're surrounded by creature comforts and accolades, they forget it. We must remember it always. The heart of Daniel chapter 3 is really this statement. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, that is, if you wish to kill us, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you've set up." Church, let me run through four qualities here that we must have. I see four. There may be more, but let me just ask you, are you faithful as these men were? And if not, don't you wish to be? I do. I see that. I see that kind of resolve that would stand before the king in a furnace heated seven times hotter than usual. I want that. That's my idea of a superhero. The reason superheroes in our modern day are so popular and why we love the movies so much is because usually the moral issues being fought for are so trivial that everybody can agree on them. And so the hero's the hero to everyone. This is the kind of hero that the Bible heralds. Those that will stand up when no one else will. These men had, here's what I want for you to see. These men had a foundational resolve that they had established years before this point in time. You remember when they were teenagers and they got to the land of Babylon and Daniel and his peers resolved that they wouldn't be defiled by the king's meat or the food in his house? They resolved, "I'm not going to be chewed up and spit out by Babylon. I'm not going to be pressed and conformed into the image of this world. I will maintain my separateness. I will maintain my holiness." And the point is that long before their lives were on the line, they made the decision to be faithful through flame or flood. Long before their lives were on the line. Church, you don't just wake up one day, and God forbid any of us ever reach a point like these men were, but you don't just wake up one day and decide, "I think today's the day that I'll be willing to die if it's expected of me." You do not do that if you've not been being faithful in the little, everyday, trivial things that we might call them. Jesus, our Lord, said, "The one who's faithful in a little thing, he will be faithful in much." Church, I don't know what your much is going to be, but the question is, are you being faithful in the little? Are you being faithful even now? If you struggle to decide if church should come before sports, you will not stand up for Jesus in the day of adversity. Why would you? See, that decision has to be made long before. Parents, if you're not teaching your children that worship is the priority above all of those other pursuits, they will cave whenever there's something that comes along and gently pushes them another direction. They have to learn that it is everything. John Piper had just a superb quote recently. He said, "There's a great gulf between the Christianity that wrestles with whether to worship God at the cost of imprisonment and death and the Christianity that wrestles with whether kids should play soccer on Sunday morning." Pretty clear cut. It's pretty obvious. I remember when I was just a kid, I don't know, it was eighth grade or something, I was a wrestler, and I won a first place in the regional championship. And so I was automatically going to state. And I remember my parents sitting me down and conversing with me about when the state championships would be. And part of it was on a Sunday morning. You know, they said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go up there, and weigh-ins are early. You're going to go weigh in. And then we're going to leave and go to church. What if your bracket's called while we're worshiping? So be it. I am so thankful to God Most High that my parents told me that and made that the emphasis, because I knew without a doubt there is nothing in this world more important than Jesus Christ. Look, I'm 37. You think I have a wrestling career? Wrestling is long gone. But what if my parents had said, it's state, that's a pretty big deal, you'll miss worship for it? What that would have taught me is that most things in life, church comes first. A big thing comes along, that comes first. The foundational resolve comes in the little things. Now, these last ones are really very quick. Trust me, I have small parts for these. There has to be a willingness to disobey tyrants. The apostles had it. We must have it. We must know that if the state ever tries to mandate or dictate into the realm which God Himself has revealed His will, we need not listen. In fact, we shouldn't. If the state ever does that, we must be resolved to say, if the state ever says you cannot worship, we will worship anyways. During the height of the COVID lockdowns, there was a minister in the country of Canada who, while the state said it's illegal for you to meet, he said, we must obey God rather than men. And they met, and he went to jail. That minister was right for what he did. The state has no right to legislate where God Himself has spoken. There must be that willingness. There must be a trust in the God who delivers, and that happens in this incubated state. That happens in these moments where we soak our heads in the Scriptures and we allow it to be immersed into our lives. We must trust that there is a God above all who is able to deliver. There is none like Him. His hand is mighty. If He permits a thing, then He permitted that thing. But God is able and God is willing, and God often will save, and there has to be a trust in this. These men knew as much. Nebuchadnezzar looked into the fire and he saw not three but four men. Who was there with them? That was Jesus, and that's the first time we're going to see Jesus in Daniel, but there's going to be more even after this. Remember, these kingdoms, even the ones wielded by those who themselves are denying God, these kingdoms belong to God, and God is sovereign over them. And then, number four, there has to be a willingness to suffer, knowing that God may not deliver. See, they said, we know God can. We know He can, but even if He doesn't, we're still going through the flames. Even if He doesn't. I often think about how 11 of the 12 apostles were martyred. Jesus, the Son of God, was hung on a cross. Stephen was martyred. In the book of Revelation, many saints were slain. Who am I? How am I any better than any of them? God may permit that. And there has to be the mindset, the preparedness, even now to say, should it ever come to that, I will go there. I will do that. That's precisely what brings the kingdom in the world. Now, I've said enough this morning. Let me finish. I've written another poem. I've been doing a lot of poetry lately. And yes, I do like to shoot deer and harvest them, but there's more to my personality than that. I think the world needs more poetry. The Bible's filled with it. And so I have a simple poem that gets at the heart of Daniel chapter 3, and I'm going to leave that with you. The splendor of an image made of gold, the tidal force of every bended knee, the legal grip of kings who've cast a mold, the sound of lyres plucked by king's decree. The music courses like the sea tide rip, and headless men shall bend immediately. No whispered gripe or protest by the lip, for brick by brick is by conformity. I see, though, through the sea, a cord of three. Unmoved by spell and fire, a strand holds fast. They stand alone, but four, I now can see, amidst the blaze, three bricks it cannot cast. Come out, you three, and tell me this design. The triune God by fire will refine. If you wish to give your life to the true and living God, He has a will for you and a way for you, and there is an opportunity to come forward even now while we stand and while we sing.